holding a press conference right now in front of McDonald's to let McDonald's know, fuck you, McDonald's. We're tired of your shit.
It's October 9th, 2009. I'm Mike Benedetti. This is 508, a show about Worcester. Today on the log with me is
Brendan Malikan.
Morning.
And special guest, Drew Wilson of VegWorcester.com.
Hello.
How's it going? To talk about the vegetarian renaissance.
Yep.
Today, I want to talk about viewer feedback. This is going to be another episode of 508 where we basically talk about news stories, which are almost completely off of the radar of normal journalists. There's as Jeff Barnard has often said, there's usually no top story in the city of Worcester. So we just pick from a totally different selection of second and third tier stories than other people, I guess. We are going to talk about a little bit about city council election. We don't have any people on this week. If you're a challenger for a city office and you're running in the upcoming election and you haven't been on the show, email us at pieandcoffee@gmail.com. We will get you out here to the woods and we will do a quick interview with you for the internet and Channel 13. Welcome, WCCA watchers. What else is going on? Oh, feedback. We got a lot of really good feedback this week.
Actual feedback.
I was watching the video of last week's show again and realized that we were a little unclear in the ultimatum that we were giving. That the ultimatum is not we need feedback or we're going to stop doing the show, because I think we just do the show because it's kind of fun to do the show.
Right here. It just makes sense.
Yes. The ultimatum is we will continue to do the show outside in bad weather if we get a certain level of feedback. So our goal again is 10 pieces of feedback a week. These could be emails, these could be phone calls, these could be blog post comments, this could be coming up to us on the street and saying, I saw the show, I hated the show, there, a piece of feedback, you have to be out in the snow next week. That's
but
how
I think
works.
We're giving a pass and we'll consider this feedback to be the kind of feedback we were looking for, since you're wearing a heavier coat, I've got the gloves on, Drew's got a heavy sweatshirt, clearly it's colder and we're still out here.
Drew, is it cold this morning?
It's pretty cold.
Awesome.
Brendan, I wanted to ask you about debates, because this is sort of like where we are in the election now. There's lots of debates. People are talking to each other, and you're going to be moderating some debates coming up, but there's also been a lot of debates going on.
Yeah, we're
going
to be doing three as far as I know. The first one will be Monday. The Chandler Street Business Association is hosting it. Gary Rosen and I will be moderating it, and it's going to be at the Buddhist Temple over on Dewey Street.
Okay.
But the debates this week were hosted by the Chamber of Commerce. Monday was the mayoral debate. Wednesday was the at-large councilors, and last night was the district councilors.
Okay.
Nothing really exciting. It was interesting. The mayoral debate predictably had a very large crowd. The house was packed, so to speak,
mm-hmm.
or the food court was packed. It was up at the Registry of Deeds, formerly right. known as the Worcester Common Outlets Food Court.
Are there still restaurants open there?
There are not, but the debate was actually held where Sparrow's once was.
All right.
Nothing really exciting. You know, I think the walking away from the mayoral debate, it was more a cult of personality sort of event. The issues that were coming up were very high-level sort of general issues, economic development versus Joe O'Brien's economic development programs versus Connie's stability and, stability, I guess.
Stay the course.
Not a lot came out of it that was very interesting. The one thing that I did find interesting was Diane Williamson asked a very pointed question to all the candidates for mayor regarding the lawsuit the TNG is currently involved in with the city over public records, just asking simply, is it fair to be spending public money on to keep public records from the public? And in my mind, the only answer to that question is no. I mean, no, it's not okay to spend public money to keep public records from the public. All the candidates went off on very long-winded explanations as to why they have to do that and why it's appropriate, and my ears kind of folded over as soon as those answers came about. I can't see how I can take anything seriously from a candidate if they don't think transparency is important. That basically tells me that whatever you say in public kind of falls by the wayside once you're behind closed doors.
Yeah.
So that left a very bad taste in my mouth. As far as the other two debates, the district debate last night was obviously more focused on district issues. My district over here, Bill Eddy doesn't have a challenger, so there weren't a lot of issues that were specific to where I live in the city. And a lot of the issues that were actually coming up for other districts, not super familiar with, simply mm-hmm. because they're a little bit more provincial. But I don't think anything came out of that was super hard hitting.
Particularly notable.
Not really. I mean, I think if there was any exchange that was worth mentioning, it would be Grace Ross and Barbara Holler. Their back and forth was pretty spectacular. I think it's clear, it should be clear to anyone that the two of them are incredibly passionate about District 4, incredibly passionate about being the elected official representing District 4, and I continue to believe that that's going to be the only real council race that matters going forward.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And none of these are on the internet.
I don't believe they are. It's funny. I don't even think they're broadcasting them live as the debates happen.
I think that they are going to be on Channel 13. I got some. So people should
there
be able to see.
There were two camera crews there. So whether or not Channel 13 decides to put them on the internet, I don't know if they have that ability. But there are cameras there. So there will be talkies or moving pictures of the debates. I don't know when they'll hit the airwaves. But I know 8:30, who is Hank Stoltz, was moderating. Mm-hmm. They're rebroadcasting them at various times as well.
Okay. Very good. Very good. And we'll definitely, the ones that you and Gary Rosen moderate, we'll definitely, they will be available all media.
At least try and get some good clips.
Because it's cold, we're going to talk here about a vintage Worcester coloring book. First, let's talk to Drew Wilson so he can...
Are we going to burn the vintage Worcester coloring book to
no,
keep us
to
warm?
To stay warm? No, we're not. Okay. Brendan here with the cigarette and the coffee.
Less cold than the rest of us. I want to get to Drew Wilson, though, because I know he's cold. I know he wants to leave.
Before his lips freeze up.
Drew, come closer. Come closer, young man.
We'll huddle.
So is the vegetarian renaissance continuing?
It is continuing. And I hear that you may have been calling it quits on the show, but I wanted to say that it's definitely not over. It's only just begun.
Okay.
This renaissance will continue for hundreds of years in Worcester.
And so tomorrow is the big Buddha Hut $10 all-you-can-eat buffet. People, Buddha Hut, Chandler Street, if you pay $10, you get a bunch of vegan Chinese food.
Yeah, absolutely. Buddha Hut has been fantastic in that every month they've been doing a fundraiser buffet for Veg Worcester. So for the day, it's from noon to 7. You can go in and try all of the different menu items. It's a great chance to try their food if you haven't done it yet. They have some really good vegetarian meats like vegetarian chicken, vegetarian pork. It's only $10, and 10% of the day's profits go to Veg Worcester to support our programs, help us print those
flyers,
dining guides, and...
And then like what's the other thing you're doing tomorrow?
So I'm really excited about Saturday because we're doing this really neat event at the McDonald's on Main Street. We're calling it a feed-in. It's a vegan feed-in. So we're going to have lots of different samples of vegetarian meats. We're going to have vegetarian chicken samples on toothpicks, and people can try it and see that there is an alternative to fast food, and there is an alternative to McDonald's and that terribly unhealthy and unsustainable way of eating.
That's a pretty awesome thing to do. I wanted to ask you, actually, in the show notes, we're going to include a link to the video Futuristic Brunch for those of you who want to learn more about the restaurant at McDonald's. I wanted to ask you also, there was an article in the paper today about people going down to the Elm Park School, people from PETA, to do some information stuff about the treatment of circus animals at the circus, which is in town right now. And you were one of the people, you were not one of those two people in the article, but you were one of the larger group of people who were actually outside the circus handing stuff out to people about...
Yeah, so I read the story last night about two members of PETA going to the Elm Park School. I used to live across the school, so it was kind of neat to see a photo of a person dressed up in a silly elephant costume handing out flyers to kids, asking them to consider the animals in circuses. Ringling Brothers has a history of abusing animals. They use these things called bull hooks to beat the elephants into submission and do silly tricks so people can watch it.
Right.
And as someone who loves circus arts, I love juggling, I love magic tricks.
What about the trapeze?
The trapeze is pretty awesome. I totally understand why people like the circus, but it's really just unacceptable the way that Ringling treats animals. So I went out with a group of animal activists yesterday and gave out some flyers at the DCU Center.
So did you think that the coverage in the TNG, from what you know, was reasonably... Was there anything that struck you about it? I'm asking you as a newsmaker, not a news writer downer, a newsmaker.
As a newsmaker and not a news reader, the photo looked great, and the first sentence was wonderful.
All right, well, very good. Well, good luck. Is this thing McDonald's... My parents are coming into town tomorrow. Is this something McDonald's, something my parents want to go to?
Well, that's exactly the audience who would be coming there. So this is going to be... a really upbeat and fun event. Hopefully we're going to welcome people over to us instead of freaking them out.
You're gonna be like free food people.
Yeah, we're gonna give out free samples of vegan food and maybe free vegetarian starter kits with some recipes and health info in it. A lot of times people have a weird impression of demonstrations or something like that, so we're doing something a little bit different.
There you go. Well, thanks for being on the show. Thanks for keeping the vegetarian
Thanks
renaissance
for the sweatshirt, Mike.
No problem. I want that back. All right, man. If you need to leave, you can leave.
Okay,
so we're going to look at this book. I'm going to give this to you to hold. What is this book, Brandon?
This is Worcester, a historical coloring book created for the bicentennial.
It's a handsome-looking book. You said you think you had this as a child?
I think I do. I think I may actually have a colored copy of this at home. Yeah, it does look very, very familiar. It may have been something that was handed out at the Worcester Public Schools or what have you.
Nipmunk Indians?
Yeah, we got the first true settlers. Just goes through the history of Worcester. Yeah.
It's pretty good. There's no picture of the turtle boy. There's a picture of the canal.
A little coloring here. That's nice.
The story of the envelope. The envelope, because the envelope folding machine was invented in Worcester.
All roads supposedly lead to Worcester, Mike.
Supposedly, or probably a early envelope folding machine.
It's I often wonder if Worcester's history is something that is all just mythology, but there is no, since nobody's really paying attention, nobody calls us on any of the
you
claims
can really basically
that we make about Worcester. we've invented everything.
The wheel was invented in Worcester. A lot of people don't know that.
1923. Yeah. Yeah, no, it's...
The Common. Here's a bunch of guys with guns on the Common. Very much like today, except for the skateboards. But that's the same wall. Anyway. Cool. Anyway, I want to thank Annie Peckett, who got this for free at the Holden Free Store yesterday.
And loaned it to us so that we could...
What is the business model of the Holden Free Store?
I think the business model... My impression of the business model of the Holden Free Store is that it's like a non-profit.
Okay.
That it's like the Holden Recycling Center, and there's people who volunteer of, like, stuff that people bring by the recycling center that's actually good, mm-hmm. we'll like, keep around, and people could, like, have an old notebook or an old coloring book rather than us pulping it.
Speaking of the history of Worcester, I noticed for the first time of the hundreds of time I've walked through City Hall, I noticed the two suits of armor on the stairwell in City Hall. Have you ever seen these
yes.
before? Yeah. A gift from England, recognizing the Battle of Worcester.
Yes.
Worcester's namesake. Where Cromwell
because they were confused. Yeah. Because they were like, they didn't realize it was Worcester, Massachusetts. It was not in England. No, that's okay.
Yeah.
Free armor.
Just get the mailing address wrong.
That's amazing. So I want to get to this viewer feedback because we have super awesome viewer feedback. Actually, one more thing I think I want to talk about is the grain teff.
Brendan, Ethiopian food. You said you don't know too much about Ethiopian food. I remember when I first came to Worcester.
I think this may have been on Volcano Boy or something. People saying the one thing Worcester needs that it has never had is a good Ethiopian restaurant. Mm-hmm. And I never really ate Ethiopian until I lived near Philadelphia. Philadelphia has a vibrant Ethiopian community. And several very good Ethiopian restaurants.
I'm going to challenge that and say that it was actually you on one of the first 508 shows said that one of the things that Worcester needed was an Ethiopian restaurant.
Somebody else said this, though.
I think you might be the one.
Was echoing somebody. All right, anyway. I think I was echoing somebody else.
It could
else,
be just you who feels
it's
this
been
way.
Said. It's been said. It's been said. It could be just me. I love Ethiopian food.
Mm-hmm. Worcester has no Ethiopian restaurants. The distinguishing thing of Ethiopian food is a sort of large, firm, sort of like a large sourdough pancake. Mm-hmm. Called injera, it's traditionally made with a grain called teff.
Mm-hmm.
As I understand it, oftentimes in Africa, because teff is kind of expensive, because it's not widely it's widely cultivated, but kind of expensive. They often will use a lot of rice flour in this also. But ideally, it would be actually a gluten. It's a big pancake, and then there's these sort of like, more sort of chopped up things that are on it, like different vegetable dish or different meat dish or whatever. One exciting thing about Ethiopian food, too, is the Ethiopian Orthodox, who are a Coptic religion,
mm-hmm.
They do a lot of fasting. I think technically you could fast more than 200 days a year if you were Ethiopian Orthodox. And usually by their fasting, part of their fasting can involve sort of like not eating until 3 o'clock in the afternoon. Part of their fasting involves actually staying vegan. So vegan food is also like, it's not seen as like, it's sort of seen, I guess, as like a hardship, mm-hmm. but there's like definitely a lot of vegan food in Ethiopian culture because of this. So you can go to an Ethiopian restaurant and be like, is this vegan or is this fasting food? And they can tell you, oh, yes or no. Anyway, the whole upshot of this is the one thing you could make anything out of a recipe book, Ethiopian food for yourself in Worcester. You can't get this complicated sourdough pancake in Worcester. Except that you can. Apparently somebody has a store in Lincoln Street.
Really?
They sell this. I have not seen this yet.
Well, let me ask you a question. Do we know what the makeup of the... Is there an Ethiopian community in Worcester? Do we know what
My sense is that the answer is no. A very good friend of mine, a very close friend of mine, is half Ethiopian, mm-hmm. and I believe that she has never really she knows of the vibrant African community, but right. there's not much Ethiopian stuff.
Nothing.
Okay, this guy, the person who runs the story, may in fact be Eritrean, based on early reports. But well, anyway, just for people who are excited about that kind of stuff, we possibly can get Injera. If we get some, we'll bring it on the show.
Yeah.
Feedback.
Feedback.
Man, oh man, viewer feedback. John Stewart, Jack Stewart from the Election Commission, who's been on this show before, writes to say, do you know anybody who'd like to work for the city of Worcester on a per diem basis as a poll worker? Put a link, city website. Brian Goslow, longtime Worcester journalist, Worcester Phoenix, yeah. Worcester Magazine.
He's like a local legend. I mean, that's just a local journalist. I mean, Brian has been a part of just about everything meaningful culturally in the city as long as I've been around.
And he does wormtown.com, wormtown.org.
Wormtown.org, which is still up. Surprisingly, it's still up. I mean, I think it's probably one of the oldest community websites in the city.
It is. And Brian, I think responding to your discussing, last week we were talking a lot about how can bloggers in Worcester sort of stake out 5% of accountability journalism. Right. Is it possible for just random people blogging to do 5% of accountability journalism? Can we measure that? Can we, if we can measure that, can we somehow organize to try to reach that goal? And one thing you said was, you know, maybe real journalists could be talking to the bloggers and telling them, like, these are the skills you need to know. Brian, I think, responding to this. I'm going to read part of his letter here. Great discussion on how bloggers could take on more important roles in covering the news of the city. Two important things needed for this to happen. First, the people need to be covered and questioned, have to engage in the process. Mm-hmm. Mentions Councillor Palpatine as someone who's not done this. Mm-hmm. More importantly, in assuming a more official role, they need to include the views and reasoning behind those who are thought to disagree with the issue they're covering or advocating for. A number of times at the Worcester Phoenix, we tried to bring local advocates on board for a one-time article we hoped would include all their passion, but almost always the piece would fall apart after they were taken back at the suggestion that they interview those they felt were responsible for whatever they wanted to see happen or convey. Mm-hmm. He talks about how In-City Times, you know, could do some things to sort of move more in that direction of looking behind some things that they bring up as being problems to look, is this a real problem or is this actually something that needs to be dealt with? Takes a lot of discipline to wait to have phone calls, email return from city officials. You might have to track them down at a council meeting or campaign and stop and ask them, did you get my email asking me what you think about ... Their response will tell you a lot. They might pull you aside and acknowledge having read it and apologize for not having gotten back to you. Or they might blow you off and say, if I had to read every email. Before you nail someone with indifference, you've got to do everything possible to get them to at least acknowledge you, even if that acknowledgement is a brush-off. Hopefully this helps you avoid having a seminar.
Right.
But if you want one, if you want to hold one, I'm there. That's awesome.
It is awesome. And I heard from personally from a number of journalists, many of whom we've had on the show as well, very similar sentiments that, you know, one of the hardest things for someone to realize, even if someone is passionate about writing but doesn't consider themselves a journalist or a reporter, that making that leap is sometimes as simple as just picking up the phone. You know, it's when people are opinionating online or in whatever format, those opinions flow freely, but at some point in time, if you're honest with yourself and your opinions, you're going to hit a brick wall and have a question, and that question can only be answered by an outside party. And that's the time, when you realize that, that's the time to pick up the phone and actually speak to somebody who can help answer that question for you. And that's also the moment when something goes from opinion to starting to be actual reporting on an actual issue. And it's not a huge leap. I mean, I mentioned the seminars only because, you know, I think it would be great if you actually could bring a large body of people who are interested in writing but don't really have all the other pieces to actually turn that writing into some form of reporting. But the like Brian says, I mean, the rules are rather simple. You just need to start engaging the parties that you're writing about as opposed to just holding an opinion about them.
Yeah. Good point. I'm going to read another letter here. This is from a guy named Joe. For people who are not known to me to be public figures, I'm only going to read their first name with their letter. This is, by the way, not Joe O'Brien, who has a later letter here. I enjoy your podcast. I've been trying to convince some of the staff here at the blank, blank, blank to help our kids start their own podcasts based on topics they are passionate about, whether it be high school or pro sports, music, restaurant reviews, or whatever it may be. I was talking to our music instructor today about a couple of students who wanted to have a radio show, and a podcast is essentially radio on demand that would talk about music and different rappers. My hope is that once they build a style and an audience, they'd be able to tackle social issues that are important to teens in Worcester, or whoever their audience becomes. More importantly, I want to give voice to their passions. I'm writing to ask you if you would come in to teach one or more of my staff and maybe a few of the kids how to start a podcast. The technology has been the stumbling block for the staff.
That's awesome. Well, sign me up if you actually want to actually
move. Oh, we should do this. I feel podcasting can teach. This is actually kind of amazing because I always think of podcasting as such a trivial thing, but this is a beautiful statement. I feel podcasting can teach our members communication skills, job skills, leadership skills, as well as help them to realize that someone who grows up in Maine South, Great Brook Valley, or Plumlee Village can have a voice. If you're interested in helping us, show us how to do this, or recommend someone who can help, please let me know. I would have to say the main thing is that the technology should not be a burden. It should be easy to do.
Right. It is relatively easy. It takes I say this like having done this for years now and having learned how to do it, but the technology is not complicated or expensive. You don't need a recording studio.
I should actually comment quickly. I think that as of this week, I have a master plan for you people at home. If you are willing to spend $150 for a cheap flip camcorder, which is what I'm using right now, if you are willing to spend $3 a week on an ongoing basis on blank DVDs, envelopes, and stamps, if you have access to any computer with a DVD drive, any computer, you do not need to pay for software to do this. I think I have a way for you, and you're willing to put in 1 hour and 15 minutes a week. These things, a camcorder, a computer with a DVD burner, money for stamps and DVDs, time, an hour and 15 minutes a week. You can do a public affairs show on cable and the internet, but on cable in the city of Worcester. That's how we're going to start doing it. I'm going to start, without leaving like the neighborhood that I live in, I'm going to put the DVD in the mail, mail it to the TV station, they'll put it on TV.
Anyway. I think it would be awesome to actually get together with some groups, especially focusing on young people who may want to be doing just this, but for whatever reason, the technological hurdles are the hurdle that they can't cross. And similar to what you said, I take for granted the way I kind of understand technology now because I grew up with it and was fortunate to do so, but it's... When I remove myself from my own experience, it's easy to understand how other people would still view the technology as a stumbling block. But what you have in your hand right now and on your lap is not something that should be a stumbling block for anybody.
I want to get to the question of city councilors spamming people. You remember the last election cycle, as I will never forget, John Mahoney spamming me, and then spamming me after the election with some stupid event at a bar, and it pissed me off. So I got this unsolicited email, not to my Pie and Coffee account, to my personal email account from Joe O'Brien's campaign.
I got the same one. I knew what you were talking about.
Telling him about some nonsense on the internet about why he's a great candidate. And I was like, damn it, take me off your mailing list. I don't need this crap. And here's what I get from him. I'm gonna read this because this is an unsolicited email. I don't think I'm crossing any ethical lines here. I don't like to read people's emails necessarily if they don't think they're gonna be read, but this seems to me like a public thing. Joe Bryan says, "Dear Mike, over the last few months, we've asked people who are supporting our campaign to share emails of people they think might be interested in receiving information about our campaign and campaign issues. Et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. I've also built a list of people I believe are interested in issues that impact Worcester. I have never and will never buy emails or regret if this email caused an inconvenience." And then, they say, we apologize for the problem. So a nice response. I think that's interesting. I guess I never thought about that, the idea that people working for the campaigns would be asked to spam your friends.
Interesting too. It's been a while since I've looked at the FCC regulations regarding the Can't Spam Act, but spam is one of those words that it's similar to obscenity or like pornography, right?
I know
it's like
when I see it.
You only know it when you see it. And unfortunately, the person on the other side of the computer who's sending out the message oftentimes doesn't realize that what they're doing is going to be interpreted as spam. But I don't think the FCC actually has any guidelines covering political campaigns. I think they kind of get the one free pass when it comes to sending out a mass email, and then folks can unsubscribe from the mailing list that they're on, as opposed to a traditional opt-in system that you would see with commercial email.
I want to read one more letter, and hopefully Brandon will have time to comment on this. This is from someone named Nicole. "Regarding elections in Worcester, I don't think that Worcester alone has a problem getting decent candidates to run for any office. I've been eligible to vote for 12 years. I vote in every election, even if it's just for city councilor, which is on the order of voting for dog catcher as far as I'm concerned. I'm very rarely excited by any candidates, whether on a national, state, or local level. I have no idea why other people don't run. I know why I would never run. I'm shy, and I don't think the city council has any real power or inclination to direct a city manager. I also think that to make any impact in any kind of elected position where you're a member of a group, you need to put in your dues, make friendships and connections, and spend at least 6 years putting in time before you can accomplish anything that you would like to see happen. That said, I wish that there would be more challengers to incumbents, but again, this isn't a Worcester-only problem. I live in District Blank. We cannot get a decent district councilor to save our lives in the past year or two.
there was a hearing to make my road public, and Mike Germain, yes, Mike Germain, knew more about my street than blank, the district councilor. I think having only one name on the ballot encourages people to vote for that person instead of doing what I do, bubble the write-in ballot and write none of the above. Why is it only District 4 has the interesting district races? Regarding Worcester Magazine, just sort of, you know, saying good and bad things about Worcester Magazine. You know, bad things, out-of-town ownership is kind of a problem. Good things, actually doing pocket-sized reviews of Worcester restaurants. For the past few years, it seemed like 9 reviews out of 10 were for restaurants outside of the city. Some things I'd like to hear on this podcast in the coming weeks. What statewide office is Guy Gallotta planning on running for? Who exactly are the hordes of people who vote for this man? Well, my father-in-law is one, so maybe I should answer my own question. Why are there letters to the TNG editor regarding the In-City Times? See, link, and vacancies on Worcester boards and commissions. Anyways, thanks for doing the podcast. I appreciated the short candidate reviews, especially. I don't have any questions for the candidates you'll be meeting with beyond what they'd like to do with downtown when City Square falls through. Did you see this letter to the editor about the In-City Times?
I did not.
Holy cow. So let me read the In-City Times. This is from a line, an article called Mayoral Rumblings by Rosalie Torella. I think that the line that they're commenting on in here is about Kate Toomey. Then there's Kate Toomey. This is Rosalie Torella writing. Then there's Kate Toomey. Rather than run for mayor, she should begin a serious weight loss program. In her 40s, Toomey walks with a cane. Arthritis? If so, losing 50 or so pounds could be the best thing for her, not a political win. She can do that in 5 or 10 years. So, in response to this, which doesn't seem, as stuff in the In-City Times goes, doesn't seem particularly out of character.
Relatively par for the course,
I guess. Par for the course. Here's a letter to the editor from the Telegram and Gazette. This is from Dawn E. Clark, Chairwoman, Commission on Disabilities for Worcester. Also signed by Cheryl Pope, Chairwoman of the Human Rights Commission. And Mabel L. Milner, Chairwoman of the Community Coalition on Bias and Hate.
Mm-hmm.
Letter to the editor. Members of the Commission on Disabilities, Human Rights Commission, and the Community Coalition on Bias and Hate found the article Mayoral Rumblings in the In-City Times August 7th an offensive attempt at journalism. Comments in the article regarding city councilors and candidates perpetuate misperceptions of people with disabilities. The elected position of the mayor of Worcester certainly requires leadership qualities, management skills, and a passion for helping others. Perceptions about disabilities hidden or not physical or emotional or irrelevant in any discussion about the democratic process. Body size and ability status are not among the necessary requirements to serve as mayor. The comments found in Rosalie Torella's article perpetuate stereotypes regarding people with disabilities rather than degrade, demean, or dehumanize any person based on perceptions of who they are. We strongly encourage all candidates, members of the media, and potential voters to approach the upcoming municipal election with civility and respect. The Commission on Disabilities, Human Rights Commission, and Community Coalition on Bias and Hate seek to ensure that all City of Worcester residents and visitors are treated fairly and equally and are committed to fostering an inclusive community. We aspire to a community of justice where acts of prejudice and hate won't be tolerated.
It's a great letter.
Why do you think that is? That's kind of odd that, like, you would complain about
In-City Times and the Telegram?
City Times and the Telegram.
It would be. I just found a new respect for the Telegram and Gazette. This past Monday, I caught a documentary on PBS that was about the history of the LA Times, but more importantly, the family, and I can't remember their last name, but the family that owned
the Chandler.
The Chandlers that owned the
People
the LA
blew
Times.
That building up.
Yeah, but the family that ran the LA Times for, you know, close to 100 years, might have been just slightly over if I'm not mistaken, their goal was to direct the city of Los Angeles. The LA Times was going to be the flagship for the LA Times. And it dawned on me after watching that the Telegram is not too different. In a way, that being the paper record, I think they still view their responsibility as setting a tone for the city of Worcester and setting a direction for the city of Worcester, which you see oftentimes in their anonymous editorials and what have you, but also in their letters, where the letters aren't necessarily representative of something that's taking place in the Telegram and Gazette, but representative of an issue that's more important to the city overall. And in a way, like I said, I found a new respect for the Telegram in the sense that they might not be the most interesting, exciting piece, journalistic set in the city, but the stability that they have and the course that they've set for themselves still may play an extremely important role in setting a tone for the city overall. That is a great example. I mean, that's although they're referring to another newspaper, what they're really referring to is an issue in the city that they sit on a set of boards and commissions that exist solely to deal with that particular issue. And making it public in the Telegram is probably the best route to make sure that the largest number of eyes actually read their thoughts.
Awesome. Thank you, people of Worcester,
for your many comments.
Thank you.
We got to go. We've got 20 seconds
it's
left.
It's freezing out here.
We'll talk to you next week. Fade to black.